Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that each week discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you do have any comments you would like to make during the broadcast, please email me first and let me know who you are at bonkay@aol.com, bonkaye@aol.com, or you can send me an email if you have any questions for our guest, and I'll be happy to ask her whatever the question might be in case you're feeling shy about calling in. And before I introduce my wonderful guest for tonight, I would like to make a few announcements. And 2 weekends from now, I'm going to be sitting in sunny Houston, Texas, where it's going to be above 30 degrees, unlike what it's been here in Philadelphia the last few weeks, and meeting with some wonderful women, including our special guest for tonight, for our healing weekend that, you know, we have twice a year. And this is where people get together and validate their experiences, sitting in a room filled with women who've all traveled on the same road, maybe at different paces, different places, but no one has to think about anything. We all understand each other. And validation is the beginning of healing, knowing that you're not crazy, knowing that other women understand exactly what you feel and that they've gone through this themselves and can give good advice for you. So we have a wonderful weekend planned. We have our very strong Houston strong, well, Texas strong women, because now Grace isn't in even Houston. She's in Austin, so it's different. But we have other women coming in from all over and who will be more than happy to be there to help you start your process. We have some wonderful guest speakers, including the one I'm going to have on here in a few moments, and also Jason from our Adult Children of Gay Fathers, to help women understand what they have facing them ahead from being in these marriages. You can hear it from the adult's point of view, from the adult children group. And also, you know, there's going to be a lot of other activities and interactions there. So if you are interested, please email me immediately at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And also I'd like to make a mention about our children's group. If you have adult children who feel they need support, our support group online is really important, and it really helps young adults and even older adults get their heads together about this whole situation. And it's been amazing how people have been able to reach out to each other who are now adults but who lived through this as, you know, young teenagers or children, and all the issues that they have to deal with because of this. So if you do have children who need help and support, please let them get in touch with me as well. And also, if you're not receiving my monthly newsletter and you would like to get it, it is on my blog at gayhusbands.com, and you can go to blog and read it. But if you would like to get it in your inbox, you know, from me, you just write to me at bonkay@aol.com. So tonight I have a very special guest that I'm re-welcoming here because she's been with us once before. And she, to me, is just amazing. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Janine Finelli. Well, Janine, how are you?
I'm lovely, Bonnie. Thank you for that sweet, sweet introduction.
Well, of course, we
all feel that way about you.
Thank you. I can't wait to get to meet you. I can't wait to meet you in Houston. I'm so excited.
I know. Finally, right? I mean,
yes.
It is definitely a silver lining.
I guess. And well, the silver lining for me is having the opportunity to meet wonderful women like you. And, you know, there has to be a silver lining. I think it's a life-changing experience. However, it shows us that we are strong and that life can move on if we have the proper supports and understand what's ahead of us so that we can change our lives and go in a better direction. And you are someone who has definitely changed your life and gone in a better direction as far as being a health and fitness coach, correct?
Correct. It's a conscious state of confusion, I guess. It's been full of choices, right? The choice to react a certain way, the choice to exercise or not, the choice to eat something or not. So, yeah, you're exactly right.
So maybe you could tell some of our women who hadn't heard you before, for our new listeners, a little bit about your situation.
Right.
And how we met.
Right. I reached out to Bonnie 2 years ago now, a little over 2 years, and was in a 10-year marriage, in a 12-year relationship, to which immediately went south, so to speak. Again, as soon as the ring went on my finger, it became like I, like you had put it, Bonnie, like I was a ball and chain. I mean, something you never see yourself as, you know, as a newly engaged woman. But so, yeah, I was the anchor. I was the prison guard. I was all of these things unknowingly. So the relationship was, we didn't have really that honeymoon period, because it was almost like he was relieved that I said yes and that his charades could stop. So for 10 years, it was, we had moments of joy, I should say, and they were always based on things with the kids being involved or family being down or events. It was never just joy to be, or joy to be together, or peace to be, you know, living our lives side by side. So it wasn't that kind of joy. But and yeah, I internalized it. I thought it was me. I wondered what the heck I had done wrong. I had put the baby to bed at 7 o'clock. I had made dinner. I was overall, you know, trying to at least be aware of the kind of person that he'd be walking in the door to, and wanted to be positive and wanted to create a loving atmosphere and you know, a marriage, and just nothing I did ever was good enough. If it was black, it should have been white. If it was cold, it should have been hot. If it was half full, it should have been half empty. If it was too late, it had to be too early. So it was, there was nothing that I could do, no matter what.
Can I ask you a question, Janine? When you were, how long were you going together before you got married? 2 years, was it?
I met him, and we got engaged about 6 months later, which I thought was pretty quick. But then we were engaged for 11 months before we got married. So about a year and a half, yeah.
So looking back now in retrospect, what were the red flags that you were missing?
Isn't that the $64,000 question?
Like, for instance, you were saying from the time your marriage started, he was very critical. Was he like that after you got engaged?
After we got engaged, yes, he began to get, he began to be very critical, yes. It was the courting and the wooing and the, you know, kind of in a sociopathic way, let me tap into this girl, learn everything there is to know about her, figure out what her hot buttons are with her kids and how to get them, you know, in my good graces, and how to be the knight in shining armor. Let me just study her and figure all this out, unknowing, you know, unbeknownst to me, I really was a science project, I think. And so really studying how I would react to things and kind of focusing on that and honing in on that, and that was the whole courting pre-engagement thing. And then, yes, once the engagement happened, it was, you know, all those excuses began, and you can see he would try to be nice, but it just wouldn't last. So things really changed as soon as we got engaged. Yeah.
I mean, the only reason I'm asking you is that a lot of times women feel, how didn't I see this? You know, why was I so blind? Why was I so stupid? And I always tell women to stop knocking yourself down, because whatever signs we see, they don't necessarily point the finger to homosexuality. And a lot of times we want something to work so much We're thinking that maybe I'm doing something wrong and maybe I can do something better. And he wasn't like this when I first met him. And why is it now he's changed? And, of course, they start subtly or not so subtly blaming you, saying, if only you could do this differently or do that differently or, you know, so you start taking the blame and the responsibility. So I think that sometimes even if there's red flags, we don't recognize them to be red flags at that time. Would you say that's true?
I would absolutely say that's true. And you made a very good point several times in the past, Bonnie, that that's why they pick us, right? Because we're open and we're forgiving and we bend and we bend and we bend and we give and we're the glue that keeps the family together. And they know that we want to keep things happy and peaceful for the kids. And they know we'll make excuses. Oh, Daddy just had a bad day at work. That's why he's, you know, turning the house upside down or whatever it is. So we make those, they know that about us. I mean, it's, and that's why I say it's a very, in my situation, and I know that everybody's situation is different, and I do believe some people, you know, there is a genuine care and respect and love there between two people. But for in my situation, I was a science experiment. And it was,
well, that was the same. That was the same in my situation, too.
Right.
So
right.
that you
and
shouldn't
so
feel that you're the only one who went through this. Now, was this your first marriage?
This was my second marriage. My my first marriage, I met him when I was 18, and we got married very young. I got married when I was 21, and we have our son together, who now my son is in college, and he's a wonderful, wonderful guy, a good father. We were just extremely young, and we didn't know ourselves enough to make another person happy. You know, it was just a very young thing, but we remain friends. He lives 10 minutes from me with his wonderful, wonderful wife, and so I'm very lucky about that, yeah. So this was my second marriage, so I came out of that marriage, and I was divorced for 6 years and had dated a couple of different people. But and as I had mentioned in the last show that I did with you, I think I mentioned it, you know, that person that I dated was great in a lot of ways, but maybe not the ways that I would wanted for my son as far as a stepfather goes, you know, just somebody very present in that capacity. Not that he was bad, it just wasn't a presence there as far as what I thought I would want for Dominic. So,
and that's so important when you have a children. Exactly, it's not like you're just thinking about yourself.
It is. You have to think about those things. And what's really interesting in retrospect, one of the reasons, and you know, you have those moments, those aha moments where it's like putting a DVD and watching a movie of your life, and you're like, oh my God, right? So one of those moments was I realized that in dating the husband that I, you know, had all this fiasco with, in dating him, one of the reasons that I overlooked everything was because he always included my son, and he always went out of his way for him. But that was just a little peg on his game board as well.
Well, maybe there's another reason for that also, was because when your son's always around, he doesn't have to be intimate with you.
Bingo. Yeah, and then so he's tapping into, he's learned how to tap into that part of me that's like, oh, my God, this person is going out of their way, and he's inviting my son on this trip, and he's getting him hockey tickets, and he's doing all these things. And so, you know, you start to overlook, well, you know, this person really doesn't want to spend any time with me, but family, 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 and that's what I was always thinking. So I can see very clearly how it unfolded and how he tapped into that, but I didn't realize it was happening, and I felt like I was being selfish because I was like, wow, here's a good guy, and he's always including my son, and, you know, and so, Janine, you're just being selfish. You know, the guy's tired, or he's busy, or just cut him some slack, give him a break kind of thing.
Did you feel at any point before you got married that he was having second thoughts about it?
Oh, gosh. Absolutely. I absolutely thought he was having second thoughts about it. And the thing with my experience and his personality was, it's like a pendulum. It was like either, oh my gosh, this person is miserable with me, or, oh my gosh, this person can't live without me. There was very little in between. The pendulum was either swinging to the left or swinging to the right. And so once I learned about the cycle of emotional control and abuse and things like that, I could see exactly, now looking back, I can see where I was in the cycle and how you're desperate to leave because this person wants nothing to do with you and they are abusive. But then, you know, 3 days later or 4 days later, they've tapped in back into that spot that makes you putty in their hands. And you don't even realize you're being molded into a little clay figure.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't.
So how hard were you trying to make that marriage work?
I have never tried anything harder in my life. I tried because I was so committed to the idea of being married, and I wanted to be exactly the kind of person that I wanted in return. And I had my son, who had already gone through a divorce when he was 1.5 with his father, and even though it was very amicable, it still, he was living in two homes, and I wanted just so much continuity for him. And then I got pregnant, which clearly she's a big gift because we really, we laughed.
Really never probably thought you'd ever get pregnant. Yes, exactly.
No. And I had a miscarriage too with him, and it's like, gosh, you sit there and you think, wow, people try forever and we're never ever together, and like a handful of times, one time I have a miscarriage and then I get pregnant, which I always wanted to have another child. And but yeah, so that was just, you know, you're sitting there and as the mother and as the core of the family, you're like, wow, the game of Jenga, when I pull out, everybody else falls. And so you're just thinking, I got to hold it together. I got to hold it together because these kids, you know, they have their days and they wake up and they go to school and you pick them up and you carpool with other moms and you clean up, throw up in the back seat and you clean the goldfish off the car and you fill up water bottles and juice boxes and pack lunches and you do all those things, and they don't know what's going on in the home unless, I mean, they always knew that he had a bad temper, but they didn't know why. They didn't know what was going on. Obviously, you keep certain things separate from them. But I tried so hard. I tried for 11 years to keep the relationship going, even when I was locked out of the house and when I was told I couldn't sleep in the room for a few years. And you know, when I was just looked at and said, you know, essentially, the hardest thing for me was, well, one of the hardest things, one of the very pivotal moments was after my daughter was born. She was 11 days old, and he was out with his friends all the time. But for a week before I had my daughter, he was home, and, you know, he was nervous about having the baby and getting everything ready. And so I have her 11 days later. He says, I'm going out with some friends. And I said, you know what, that's fine. You deserve a night out. You know, it's been a long few weeks, and go out with your friends. And he says, I'm going to be home early. Well, he didn't come home early, and I was feeding my daughter at 2 o'clock in the morning, nursing her in the bedroom. And he came home, and a cab dropped him off at the house, and he had been drinking. And he came up the stairs, and he just looked at me, and this is very, very, very deep, and I'm so grateful for the platform right now to even be able to say it, because there's been a handful of counselors who have heard it. But he looked at me and he just said, you're just a useless non-working bitch. And he closed the door. And that was as I'm feeding our 11-day-old baby. And I knew that he just had plans for me, they didn't involve a happy marriage. so it was very, very difficult, and it just only got worse from that.
I feel so terrible listening to your story.
Mm.
I mean, you're such a beautiful, wonderful person, and to have to be exposed to this kind of abuse for so long, I mean, it's just so unforgivable. And that's why I say a lot of times with these, right? I mean, these men, okay, it's one thing when you don't know or you're questioning yourself and you're hoping if you fall in love with someone, those feelings will go away. I mean, I do understand that. I really do. But to go and get married and to be so abusive and mistreat the woman you married and promised to love and cherish and honor, okay, maybe mm-hmm. you couldn't keep your end of the bargain as far as being honest about your homosexuality, but why torture
right.
her? I just don't get it.
Right.
Do you?
No, it is. It's such a, there's such a, they torture, you were tortured, I was tortured,
mm-hmm.
millions of women are tortured because we are their veil of normalcy. And
mm-hmm.
they need us, and they need us to say we're married. They need us to, in the home, they need that instant family. And
mm-hmm.
and they, you know, everybody is so different in, you know, whether they come out or whether they don't or, you know, what they decide is best for them. But I think people like my husband, they just cannot, I don't even profess to try and get inside his head and understand because I can't even think the way that he does. But, yeah, he needed me there, and he wasn't about to do the work necessary in order to create a healthy life for himself. It was, my family better make me look good.
Did you ever talk to him about going for counseling?
We went to marriage counseling a few times, and it never...
Most gay men don't want to have marriage counseling more than once or twice,
no.
And you're really lucky if you can even get them there once or twice.
Oh, isn't that the truth? I mean, and he went in, he would show up like two or three times, but there were always canceled appointments because he was busy and things had to be shuffled around and I can't go this day. And he made it extremely difficult to really actually meet for an appointment. But if we did, he'd be sitting there and I'm looking at this person. I'm thinking, wow, we're like, he just had no problem falsifying things. And the data that was coming out of his mouth was completely a lie, and
distorted.
I would look at him and think, oh my gosh. And so then I have a counselor who's like, you know what, you guys just need to hug it out. You guys just need to talk more and schedule sex. That's what you need to do. You need to just pick a few days. I know it's very unromantic, but, and I'm thinking, oh, you don't know, no, that's not going to work. So I started to look at it as not a waste of time, because anything that good that come out of it would be a good thing. But I started to look at it as it is a waste of time because this person is not bearing their soul. This person is not being honest. There was one very honest thing that he said with one counselor, and I should have taken it for more than a grain of salt that I did. I wasn't really, you know, putting enough weight on it that I should have. But he said, sex with her repulses me. And, of course, this is 4 years before I found you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, wow. Wow, way to, like, stab somebody in the heart. Yeah.
But you still didn't know that gay was the issue, right?
No, never, 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 because he was that awkward, outward, very 16-year-old type, flirty, you know, compliment every woman on their shoes and their dress and everything, make comments. I mean, he was so outwardly, but I think obviously now it was to appear a certain way and make sure that he was putting spackle on the cracks in case anyone saw them.
Right. My ex-husband had so many women who were just so still to date, totally enamored by him, you know, flirtatious and, you know, very gifted as far as telling stories to people that aren't
right.
true. But women really fall for him, and it's like amazing to me that even when we were younger and we were, you know, divorced, but we were working in the same place for a while because mm-hmm. me, being who I am, got him a job there. And,
right.
you know, sometimes we would argue there because, you know, that was just how he was. And, mm. you know, but other people didn't necessarily hear it. But one woman came out to me one day and she said, "He is just the greatest guy in the world. I can't believe that you didn't stay married to him." I said to her, "Excuse me?" She said, "He's so great. He's so wonderful. How could you ever let him go?" I said, "He's gay." And she said,
"Right.
Well, so what? Everybody has something wrong."
Oh,
you know, people
man.
Are just, and she meant it. You know, that's the saddest part, because he just seemed like Mr. Wonderful to other people.
Right.
But, you know, once they got to know him, he didn't seem so wonderful most of the time.
Right.
But
right.
on the outward appearance, he knew how to act the act, play the game. And, you know, it was just, like I say, these guys are professionals. You know, they're constantly thinking up this stuff because, right? I mean, they really have to spend all day living their lie and figuring out, how am I going to get through the lie today? Am I going to be able to fool somebody today? And they have to have this so planned out and so calculated.
Right.
And like I even said in my newsletter that went out yesterday, these guys, you know, their whole life they've observed straight people. So it's not like they don't know how to act straight. They can act like it, but they're not. So even though to the outward appearance they can look like they're straight, you know, it's not like they're all effeminate men who are, you know, swishing around. My ex-husband was an athlete, you know, and he was very strong. You know, he's not your stereotypical gay that you run across. How was yours?
Right.
Was he like that too?
Yeah, he was, and now he's, over the years, he's gotten much more, several people, well, a lot of people are like, wow, we can totally see it now. So he always was...
Mm-hmm.
very sharp dresser and very, athletic and, you know, well, he was 40 pounds heavier when I met him. And now, of course, he's lost 40 pounds 3 years ago, and he's kept it off because he's, you know, he's really made great changes with his diet. But so he wears, you know, he'll wear the suit and the purple tie and the socks that have purple in them, and he'll put the tie over his shoulder when he's eating his sushi so he doesn't get anything on his tie. And he's very, very, very meticulous. but you can definitely see it now. There's definitely been a shift over the last, especially the last 3 years. And he's got a lot
of friends.
Now,
do you find him very controlling?
Did I?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he is, and what's interesting is professionals who have helped me along, counselors and things like that, I mean, they look at him and they're like, "You got to be kidding me. This guy's bullying you." But he's very scary when he's angry, and he's very controlling. And, you know, it's like sometimes those little dog, I mean, he's not little, he's 6 feet tall, he's, you know, normal build, but those little dogs, you know, the big ones just sniffing around the tree and the little ones barking up a storm and growling and being mean and you know, so it's in him, and it can be very, very scary, very controlling. I have a fear, and I see how it also, that loop of control, the pendulum swinging back and forth is very, what hurts me the most is to see how my kids were on that ride as well, and helping them to recognize. And now my son's older and he gets it, and, you know, it's not his father, and he sees things for what they are. But to see my daughter, you know, have to manage that, you know, daddy's angry at me and daddy's this, daddy's that, and then the next weekend it's wooing her, it's spinning that web around her, it's making her feel like a princess, and she doesn't understand enough about what's going on. That's very hard as a parent.
No, and then once, you know, you're stuck with them because it's their children.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you can be totally free, because most of them just don't walk away like that. It's not like they're going to be doing much of anything for you, but they'll sit there and they'll torture you. Right?
Right, and now that you're gone and they can't say there's a wife at the house, So who's their next victim of the veil of normalcy? That's the children. So whatever part they're not identifying with, maybe, you know, gay men, no one will think I'm, and to use your word, which is very good, non-straight behavior, because I really like how you say that. So no one will think any that I'm not straight because I have my daughter, and or whatever it is that goes through their head. So now it's everything is centered around her, and it's hard. So I figure if I can't change him, which obviously I can't, the only thing that I really focus on is empowering my daughter to use her voice and to speak up as much as she can, and to know that sometimes things will work out and sometimes things won't, but you have to speak your piece. You have to say what's on your mind. You have to ask, and it's that vulnerable feeling that we all feel, you know, that road of vulnerability. You could be turned down, and you might not. You could ask Daddy if you can come back to me early today, but he might say yes, and that brings in the joy, or he might say no, and then you're feeling, you know, let down or sad or whatever it is, but it's that space that I'm trying to bring her into at 10 years old so that she can say, I asked and I tried and maybe it'll work out, and okay, yeah, I'm not going to get locked in the attic for asking. I might get disappointed, but at least I tried. So that's where I'm focusing on, is helping her to do those things early on.
So do you have to have much contact with him because you share a child together?
Yeah, I do. I try to. I ignore probably 80% of the threatening texts and emails that come my way. Because he's still
a lot of times
angry.
I notice it's really hard to emotionally distance yourself when you're sharing children or you have to, you know, be involved because of children. And I know that mine really zapped me back in so many times that I could have, should have, you know, made an emotional disconnection to him, but I didn't.
Right.
But does yours try to keep zapping you in also?
He,
like getting you,
he tried,
you know, reaching out to you.
He will. Most of it is sort of threatening things. Like, you know, he'll say something like, "I'm letting her come back to you early today because she misses you." Well, then come to find out, it was only because he needed her to be with me because he was going out. He had concert tickets or something. It's never about putting her needs first. It's about making it look like he's putting her needs first, but then going off and doing his own thing. That's more convenient for him anyway, which I'll have her, I would love her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all the time. So I'm always like, yeah, you know, bring her back early. So, but it is reaching out. I mean, even in December, you know, I was sent a text that said, come home. And that was his response to, we were having a discussion about health insurance and stuff like that, and he would want me to come home, not because he loves me or cares or anything like that, because it would just make his story so much more believable. Janine finally came to her senses. She came home. This has been a crazy 10 months, but I'm glad it's behind us. That's what it would be. And then it would be, keep my cover, Janine. It would be exactly where I left off. So I don't look at the come home at all as an emotional thing, like, oh, my God, I missed, because, you know, I know the game now. I know the game.
Well, I just commend you so much because you're just, you know how to really put this together. And knowing you still have to face this for another at least 8 years of your life until your daughter's 18. And then you're never totally home free because then, you know, they get married, you're there, grandchildren. You know, it's like these relationships just linger on far past the time than they need to. And I know that in my particular case, both of my children passed away. So I really didn't have to sit there and let it linger on. But, you know, I felt manipulated. You know, he would say to me, well, our children are gone. We have to hold on to each other. You know, the children wouldn't like it if we weren't. You know, he would try every kind of manipulation there, too. But, you know, I was just a little emotionally attached instead of detached to him until, you know, a year ago, really. So I know that, and that's 30-some years later after the divorce,
wow.
or 30 years later, 28 years later.
Oh, my God, that is funny. That is so hard. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Oh.
Thank you. But it was, you know, like I say, something that kept us together much longer than we should have been because he was still manipulating me because he's also a control freak. And, you know, he has to control everything and everyone around him. So I was just another pawn for him. So that was, you know, the sad thing that a lot of times these guys don't want to let go. But you have to know that, and you have to be able to say goodbye. You know, breaking free emotionally is really difficult sometimes, even though the marriage is over.
It is.
But you seem to have a really good attitude about it, and you have, like, a really positive attitude. So it'll probably be easier for you. I know your life fell apart, but look how well you put it together again. And when did your whole... you did such a beautiful job. But when did your whole interest in turning this around happen for you as far as becoming a coach for health and nutrition?
Well, I went back to school. I was in the pharmaceutical industry. I went back to school in 2007, and that's when I got my health coaching certification. And that really was because physically I was feeling so awful, and I was always interested in it. It was a huge passion of mine. I had all these great books, and I just thought, God, I'm feeling called to do this. I need to get out of pharma, which is medication, and into prevention. And so I did that, and I swear that was like one of God's biggest gifts to me. In order for me to have survived this, I would never have been able to survive and be kind of chewed up and spit out by this man with any resemblance of Janine at all. Had I not fought every day for some sort of glimmer of some sort of nourishment for myself, whether it was choosing a healthy food or, you know, moving out of the bedroom and sleeping somewhere else, or learning how to clear my mind, or saying no to all the events, all the social events he wanted me to go to that I knew I wasn't going to be treated with respect. I started saying no to things. And I remember one time I was on, we had a trampoline in the backyard, and he was getting picked up, and he was all dressed up, and, you know, his cufflinks and his cologne. We used to buy cologne every week. And I was on the back. I was in the backyard with my daughter on the trampoline, and the guy pulled into the driveway to pick him up. And he always had this driver come pick him up. And you know, I was so happy being on the trampoline barefoot with a ponytail and a pair of shorts and Lily. And I was so happy when I finally said, "I'm not going." So it was a combination of the eating and the more exercise and saying no to certain people that just kind of made my skin crawl. A lot of them were wonderful people, but there were certain circles that just, it was hard enough to fake it. I didn't want to have to sign up to fake it more than I really had to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was home. I stayed home a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it began with, and it's funny because I'm so into yoga now, and I have a lot of friends who used to do yoga, and I've been doing yoga for about 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who introduced me to it is my ex-husband's wife. And she said, "My yoga teacher knows you. She said you need to come to a class." And I was like, you know what? Okay. So I went with my ex-husband's wife, and we went to this yoga class, and I fell in love. And I've been going ever since. And so that was the physical and the mental component that I really, really, really needed, plus a non-competitive environment. It wasn't about anything that you looked like. You could be 100 pounds. You could be 300 pounds. You could have long hair. You could have short hair. You could be pregnant. You could be married, divorced. And it was all so welcome. And so I really found a lot of peace there in the yoga studio.
A lot of people find it just that, you know, another way to unwind, to get rid of stress. You know, yoga is a very big stress killer.
It really is. It's so good. There's so many different types of classes, and I always feel like it's the biggest bang for my time. Like if I have 90 minutes to take a class, I want to burn the most calories that I can and clear my head as much as I can. So for me, yoga or hot yoga is the, you know, something that I really enjoy because I can't do it every day, but I do it, you know, 3 times a week. And in the summertime or spring or fall, I'll go to walking trails and things like that. So it's really been very helpful. It's been huge. It's been huge in those building blocks of recreating Janine. Like I feel like I'm like with like the melted wicked witch or the melted witch on the floor, and there's like me and my shirt and maybe a wine glass or, you know, something. And I felt like I had to kind of sweep her up, and there was all these pieces, and there was no one magic piece. It didn't come from the organics. It didn't come from just the yoga. It didn't come from friends, you know, telling me you deserve better and you can do this. It means all of that. They're so irreplaceable, each piece, that they were all so necessary.
So yoga was the beginning of the turnaround, or were you already turning around, then you found yoga?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Did yoga come first, or were you already into your health regimen and then you learned yoga after that?
The food stuff came first.
The
knowledge of food and how they affect your body and cravings and why we have them and what a balanced diet really is and what marketers are trying to sell us because they make money off of us from. So all of that education came first, and I started applying it, and then the yoga was right behind that. And for me, too, I had been in a car accident I had mentioned last time when I was 16 years old, and so I've had a lot of I went through the windshield, had a lot of abdominal surgery because of that on my intestines, and so I was always very nervous because I've had pain on and off for a few years, you know, following that for probably a good 15 years, actually. So I was always really nervous to do any core work. Like, I ignored my stomach. You know, I didn't pay much attention to it. I didn't do sit-ups. I didn't do crunches. I didn't do any of that kind of stuff because I always had a fear of hurting something, or so I just ignored that part of my body. And then once I began to do yoga, I realized, wow, like I work, you know, like I'm whole, like I can do this, and I'm not going to break in half, and I'm not going to, you know, tear something, and I'm not going to get a stomach ache. I can do this. And so it took me a really long time. I think the fear held me back from, you know, from having that core strength and nurturing that part of my body. Plus, the more I ignored it, the more I ignored that I was a woman. It was almost like the worse my periods got, too. It was just really weird saying. I don't know if anybody listening is familiar with Christine Northrup. She talks about the signals our body gives us and how your femininity can scream out to you. And I really think that that did happen to me, too, on and off throughout those years of being ignored and unloved. And you try to suppress your being, and yet it's almost like it's bubbling to the surface. Fascinating.
And that's something that a lot of women going through our situation, you know, they're constantly living with stress. They're constantly, you know, constantly living with conflict. And a lot of them have new problems that they never imagined. You know, just recovering from the whole gay thing is a whole issue in itself. But then you have to make financial adjustments with your life, downsizing your life, being now a single parent for many people. You know, are very almost like a single parent all the time, having very little time for yourself. And I think a lot of women really get depressed over this, which is understandable. And they turn to medication, which I don't really always feel is the best thing. Were you in that situation at all?
And I do know that situationally it can really help people get through a period. And so I'm not passing any judgment whether or not it's something that should be long-term use. I mean, you always like to say it's going to help somebody through something until they can get through it on their own or get through it, you know, stronger. I never did. I did have to use sleeping pills sometimes, not in excess and not every night, but I definitely... I had to knock myself out mainly because it was such a lonely place to lay next to somebody who made you feel like the worst person on the planet, or to be in the house with somebody like that. It was really just a numbing technique that I don't think, had I not been in that relationship, I don't think I would have needed that. Or,
Situation is situational, and I understand that. But, like I said, I think there are so many other things you can do that you could help people with as far as being more health conscious that could really help women being in a state, right?
Oh, right. I mean, because you have to look at yourself as you are in this eye of a hurricane. And what do they always say about the eye of the hurricane? There's no wind. The sky is blue. There might even be some birds in there. I mean, it's amazing when you see pictures that are taken in something like that. And so I just kind of looked at myself like, I've got to create this bubble of peace around me because there is a hurricane and I'm in it and it doesn't look like it's ending anytime soon and I'm not in control of it. So I always ask myself, what can I do? What can I do? And so it did. It started with the things that I knew weren't healthy for me. I started to think about, okay, so I need to sleep. I want to sleep. I need sleep to be healthy. So I started looking at my caffeine. And I realized that some people can drink 10 cups of coffee and lay down and pass out. And I still see a lot of clients and patients that can do that. But that's really not the norm. So then I sat there and I was like, oh, my God, I'm having green tea because I think it's healthy for me. And it's with my dinner at, a Japanese restaurant, I'm having a little cup of green tea. Well, guess what? Once I started to realize, oh, my God, there's so much caffeine in there, I cut that green tea out. It made a huge difference for me. I started to look and say, what can I do? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, well, green tea is healthy, but it's really not healthy at 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the evening for somebody like me who's that sensitive to caffeine. So we have to kind of free ourselves from thinking, oh, it's only one cup, or it's only one packet, or it's only one can, or it's only, because for us, or for you, that only is really a lot of times enough to put somebody over the edge between sleeping and not sleeping, or, hot flashes or no hot flashes, or PMS or no PMS. So it's really, I really looked at the sugar and the caffeine, and I did the dirty work. I did the dirty work, and I tell you, it's not fun, but the results are so fun. The results are, oh my God, I love to sleep. I love to be able to wake up feeling rested. Let's put it that way. I don't sleep late. I don't get tons of sleep, but I get deeper sleep. So I brought in the magnesium, and I watched the caffeine, and I drank more water, and I treated myself like a baby that I was putting to sleep, and I didn't get overstimulated, and I took deep breaths, and I would, just have calming activity with low light, and I gave myself the permission to be alone. Even while this person was following me around the house wanting to bug me or start a fight with me or whatever it was, I retreated to a nice little nest in the house where it was me and, Nancy Grace or Dr. Drew or maybe, King of Queens or something funny or whatever it was that was on TV, or it was a book and peace and quiet, and I allowed myself that freedom. That was one of the harder things for me to pull away because I still felt guilty. But I did, and I was like, wait a minute, I deserve peace. And it was that slowly pulling the prongs out of me that he had in me and creating space and not having an extra glass of wine in the evening with him just because he wanted to. Like, I knew that would help me fall asleep, but I knew it would keep me, I would wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with my eyes wide open. So sleep, caffeine and alcohol is huge. And anybody who has quite, a few drinks in the evening knows that their sleep is very disruptive, not to mention it gives you crazy hot flashes if your hormones are already unstable and things like that. So I just kind of applied what I had learned, and it wasn't always fun, but I also learned that turning the corner was always a lot closer than I thought it was. I was always more afraid of how long I was going to be on this road. But then once I got on the road, I realized, oh, okay. I just had to go 100 steps. That's all I had to do.
Mm-hmm. I just want to tell you that after you were on last time, you know, a couple months ago, since then, believe it or not, two women have written to me telling me how they're doing they're taking the magnesium and they really feel so much better.
Oh, good. I'm so glad because that makes me so happy. Now, I know you had to start it, but then you went off. You had to go off because of
right. I had some surgery.
Situation.
I'm
right.
healing, so I'll be getting back on it very shortly.
Good, good, good. Yeah,
okay.
it's a great mineral.
I was really impressed
mm-hmm.
that they wrote to me and said, we love this magnesium. Or one wrote that
yeah.
she feels better, and the other one says she feels great.
Right. It's wonderful for men and women. I mean, you know, I it's good for both. I have a good friend that I just told him about it because he's got some back issues. And it's just a really great anti-inflammatory. And the thing with magnesium is you just got to take it every day, 400
mm-hmm.
milligrams of magnesium glycinate. I usually take it in the evening.
Uh-huh.
But you can take it in the morning, but I usually take it in the evening because it's the anti-stress mineral. It's needed for over 300 metabolic functions in our body. We're all deficient in it. And, you know, it really is a great thing just to try and add in. So the things that we can do they're not like having to climb a mountain. They're pretty simple things. And I always tell people, too, whenever you're beginning something new, you know, put sticky notes on your refrigerator, put a sticky note on your dashboard, write a letter on your hand, write the letter M on your hand so you don't forget. Remind yourself, leave the bottle out on the counter. You know, we have the tendency we want the counter clean and we put the vitamins in the cabinet, but leave the bottle out on the counter because to create that habit, you need these things in front of you. You need reminders. It's too easy to forget. So one of the ways that you can hold yourself accountable is to make sure that you know, you have these reminders, whether it's on your hand or a sticky note or on your phone with an alert so it goes off. You know, whatever it is, hold yourself accountable because nobody else is going to do it for you. So when you do that, I mean, you might have a couple of sticky notes on your dashboard, but it's okay. Get lipstick and write it on your mirror. You'd be surprised how many things I write on my bathroom mirror. And you won't forget. And that's kind of very helpful in creating a new habit because, let's face it, when we get up, we're on autopilot. Either we make our tea or we make our coffee or we drink our smoothie and we get kids up or we go to work or we take care of aging parents or, you know, we have our responsibilities, whatever it is, you have to remind yourself.
Well, I just
okay
found a new
that.
Product that I love, and I don't know how you feel about it.
What?
But I just discovered this like 2 months ago because my niece works in distribution of health food products,
mm-hmm.
and it's coconut oil.
Oh,
now
you're speaking my language. Can I just tell you, yesterday, I use coconut oil for so many things, including I put it on like the last 2 or 3 inches of my hair and leave it
uh-huh.
on there for a couple hours while I'm working from home and I pin my hair up. It is the
uh-huh.
best hair conditioner, yes. And coconut oil is, I'm so glad that you found that and you like it. It's great for high heat dishes. It doesn't change the molecular structure, and we know oils go rancid very quickly. I mean, we change the oil in our car because it gets old and used, and that's how oils are in our diet. So coconut oil is it's solid at room temperature, and it's got a mild coconut flavor, but it's wonderful for stir fries, and, you know, it's great for veggies and things like that. I love it. I put it on my hair. My mother uses it after a shower all the time, and it's really, really great for skin.
Yeah, it is, and I'm using it, you know, for skin because, you know, I have dry feet in the wintertime from all the heat.
Right.
Even my
right.
boyfriend, you know, I said to him, you got to try this. And, you know, I bought him a jar of it also, but I had him try it
good.
Here. Just take
good.
A little bit, you know, and you can rub it all over. It goes really far.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm always over, of course, using it on my skin or just eating it, you know, it's kind of half and half.
Right, right. And you
don't
feel greasy afterwards. I mean, within 10 minutes, it's really gone into your skin quite nicely, huh?
Oh, it's really great. And it really, you know, I use it all the time now on my body. He uses it
right.
on his because his hands are really dry. And I just love it. And my
right.
niece actually went to show where they're making it. This is from Dr. Bronner. Have you heard of him?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So he makes it, and she inspected the factory where they're doing it. He said that it was, you know, spotless. It was just, you know, so clean. And watching them do this naturally, you know, how they created this oil. So it does say here, you know, so she's the first jar, and I've gone through like six since then. I haven't tried cooking with it, but
yeah, it's great. I will, like, I'll make my daughter gluten-free pancakes in the morning, and that sounds like really unfun and not good, but I'll tell you, there's some really good brands out there, and you'd never know. And I put a little bit of coconut oil in the pan instead of butter, you know, or you can just put a little bit of on crackers. The thing, too, about, like you just mentioned, how much you love it on your skin, it's so important when we think about why is there so much skin cancer. Like, I personally feel like, yes, it's not healthy to burn, and I know that's not good, and I know that can definitely add to skin damage and some cancers. However, one would have to think that slathering on and sudsing up in chemicals from when we're born till when we're 30, 40, 50, 60 years old can't really be good, considering the fact that our skin is our largest organ. All of that's going into our bloodstream. All of it's going into our liver. These chemicals are highly toxic, lots of different carcinogens. And so I just kind of think, like, wow, olive oil, grapeseed oil, coconut oil, those have got to be better than a lot of these products. Plus, they're a lot cheaper, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, why buy something that has coconut oil in it when you can buy coconut oil that's cheaper and you can cook with it and you can use it after your shower or your bath? So when you think about skin health, it's And what you said, and I'm so glad you just said that, too, because when we think about health and beauty, it's like really about being healthy and having a strong immune system and being able to live and enjoy the lives after we get through all this crap as much as we can. So you want to be as healthy as you can. And so when you think about your skin, it's really important because, you know, the isolated cosmetic here and there, the lip gloss, or, you know, sometimes getting a nice smelly lotion from Bath and Body Works that you like or whatever. It's not the isolated things. It's the 50 years every day after you come out of the shower and your pores are open. What are you putting on your skin? So that's a really important thing to think about. I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, I'd also like to bring up the fact that, you know, Janine is a, you know, fitness expert, a coach. You don't have to be near her. She can do it with you by phone or by Skype. And you hear how upbeat she is and how good she makes you feel and how non-threatening she is because, you know, I had a long talk with Janine, to be honest with you, prior to getting her on my show and said, look, I'm old, I'm fat, you know, I have all these things wrong with me. And she said, well, that has nothing to do with anything. You know, you just want to feel better about yourself, whatever little improvements you can make. You know, she's very non-judgmental. And as you can tell from her conversation, she's very understanding, which I love about her. And so if you're looking for a health coach, I mean, this is the woman to go to. She has the best training in the world from all the top people in the world, including Dr. Oz, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One of your teachers.
Bonnie, you're so sweet. Thank you so much for saying that. I really am glad that you feel that from me because I couldn't do what I do in any other way than I, you know, I want that message to be exactly what you just said. I don't pass judgment on anybody because I've been there and I...
And not only that, so you do really emphasize that, you know, whatever change you make for the better is great. You know, you don't have to make a million changes all at once. That, you know, if it's a matter of just a little something different to make yourself feel better and to make yourself feel healthier, every little thing is a wonderful thing. You're not pushing anything for any time frame, right?
No. I mean, having goals are always a good thing to say, you know what, I'm going to get out of this relationship. I'm going to, you know, I want to do this. I want to create this with my business. Or, you know, having personal and financial and business-oriented goals are always a good thing. But with health, I think I might have said last time, I know that, you know, I know somebody who runs 8 or 10 miles a day, and every time this person comes home, well, not every time, but at least 5 days a week, they get a large pizza delivered to their house, eat the whole thing. So I'm sitting here saying, wow, like, this is awesome, though, because could you imagine if he wasn't running? So, like, this is good. You know, it started with him with the exercise, which is huge. Mm-hmm. So whether it starts with the exercise or starts with the food or starts with the way we talk to ourselves, saying, you know what, I deserve better. This is not good. I've got to come up with my plan. It might take me 6 months. It might take me 6 years, but I'm developing my plan. Wherever that shift happens from you, I promise you, you can't help but have it trickle down to every single part of your life. You can't.
Right, and
you
even if it's something like the magnesium, just doing something to feel better, make yourself stronger. So there's lots of little you can do without making a major sacrifice. And like I mentioned, even if it's using special oils or if it's taking a pill, and it can make you have some better health, I mean, that's what you're about. You know, and about pressuring people, you should be doing this and doing that. And that's why, you know, if you're looking for someone to work with you so you can feel, you know, in better health, let's tell them your website so they can write it down.
Yes.
I love your website, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I just redid it. It's JeaneFinelli.com, JeaneFinelli.com. And, I do have a reduced rate for just the Bonnie, we love Bonnie rate. for all of the listeners, for everybody who, you know, all my girls, all our girls, all our, you know, or anybody really, I shouldn't just say just the girls, anybody who really, through Bonnie, just, you know, wants to really understand what am I doing, what am I doing that's good? And what am I doing that I need to tweak? And not even good and bad, but what am I doing that's helping me get to my goals? This is what I eat, Jeaneen. This is what I take. This is where I sleep. This is how I sleep. This is what I need to sleep. This is who I work with. They drive me crazy because they always have, like, chocolate chip cookies or Krispy Kremes or whatever. You know, this is my boss drives me crazy. So I come home from meetings and I eat all of those things we talk about in a very confidential session and just shine light on, okay, cool, do this. Switch this out, try this, experiment with that, and I'm calling you in 2 weeks, and we're gonna touch base, and we're going to see how you feel and, you know, what's been going on. So it's really, it's a place to start, and I always feel like if you don't start today, a year from now, you'll wish you did. So, and I was that girl who always put it off, and even though I knew what to do, things had to get, you know, I had to hit rock bottom like so many of us have. And, and the sad thing is that sometimes women who are dealing with this isn't even the only crisis that they're dealing with. They have sick family members or, you know, things going on with their children and all of these other areas that just, it's like they can't even get up above water for a breath of air. And I want to help you do that. I want to be that person that you can just lean on my shoulder and get up above water and have a little bit of clarity. So
I wish you were here so I could give you a big hug. 2 weeks.
I know. I can't wait.
And you know what?
I can't wait.
You know, like Jeaneen mentioned, if you need help, her website, there's an email where you can contact her or write to me at bombk@aol.com. And for our Women Converging Upon Houston, Janine's going to be doing a seminar for us there on little things you can do to start making your life better. But her coachings have to be such an uplifting thing for women to do for themselves. And once again, you can be anywhere and be on the phone or you do Skyping too, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I don't want to speak out of turn. Yeah, so you can actually see Jeaneen, talk to her face to face, and she can turn your life around. So, you know, give her a look at her website, write to me, and I'll send you her website or send you how to get in touch with her. And Jeaneen, I really hope you come back to us every few months to spread the word and to get people on a better track and so that they get to know you and call you and you can help them turn their lives around like you've done for your own. That's all I can say. You're a most remarkable woman. And I just love hearing you speak. So that's why I want you to come back. because I'm selfish.
I'm glad.
I love to listen.
I'm selfish. You know what, Bonnie? You're stuck with me. I'm sorry. You're stuck with me.
Janine, I'm so excited about that. So anyway, I'll see you in 2 weeks, and I'll say goodnight to our listeners, and you can say goodnight too.
Yes. Goodnight, beautiful people. Just put your hand over your heart and tell yourself you're worth it.
Well, thank you so much
for
that beautiful message. All right, and everybody, we'll be back next week. And then the following week, I'll be on break because I'll be in Houston giving Janine a big hug, as well as our other wonderful women who would like to be there to meet her. All right, so good night to everybody. Good night, Janine. I love you.
Thank you. Good night, Bonnie. I love you.
All right, and I'll talk to you soon. Good night, everybody.
Ciao.